Hello there. Today is Tuesday, July the 19th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump's wife, Melania, makes the case for why he should be the next president. The latest on the ambush killings of police officers in the state of Louisiana. The World Anti-Doping Agency is urging an Olympic ban on Russian athletes. Also ahead, the best new movies to hit theaters this week. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the Republican National Convention officially underway in Cleveland, Ohio. Tumult broke out in the early hours of the event after party officials adopted rules by a shouted voice vote, a move aimed at blunting anti-Trump forces seeking to derail the presumptive nominee. Delegates erupted in competing chants in a televised dispute.
The question is on adoption of the resolution. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it, and the resolution is agreed to. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
Later Monday evening, Donald Trump's wife, Melania, took to the stage to speak on behalf of her husband.
With all of my heart, I know that he will make a great and lasting difference. Donald has a great and deep and unbounding determination and a never give up attitude. I have seen him fight for years to get the project done or even start it, and he does not give up.
Well, let's talk more about the opening day events with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, who joins us live from Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for being here. I know it's been a long day.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, you were actually there earlier in the midst of that early chaos. Tell us about that.
That's right. So I was on the convention floor as all of this was unfolding. I was actually standing with the Washington State delegation, which was one of the 11 states that signed on to this petition that was given to the convention secretary to try and change the rules. And I've got to tell you, the delegates that I spoke to and that I stood with as they were chanting roll call, they were incredibly emotional as all of this was unfolding. They clearly feel this very strongly. I was speaking to them and they were saying that this is about upholding the values of America, upholding the values of the Constitution, and allowing delegates to really vote their conscience. And, of course, as we know, that didn't play out for them. They failed at that attempt, but they certainly gave it a good try, and it was certainly a chaotic, combative scene on that convention floor this afternoon.
Pretty unprecedented in many, many,
oh,
many recent years.
Absolutely, certainly.
Well, and then, of course, we had the headline speaker tonight, Melania Trump. How was she received, and what kind of impression do you think she made?
Well, I think there was an interesting anticipation here about what exactly Melania would say. This is a chance for Melania to show us the personal side of Donald Trump. And, you know, she didn't give us a lot of those specifics in that speech, but you can't underestimate the power of Donald Trump's family. You know, all of the delegates that I've spoken to so far here in Cleveland, they always mention Donald Trump's family. They talk about his wife. They talk about his children. They talk about how he's really stayed close with all of them and how much that means to him for a leader. They say, you know, look to a man's family and that'll tell you who he is. So I think really to have Melania, just to have her out there and go out there and talk about her husband was enough.
And certainly when he first came out, he made somewhat of a striking entrance.
That is right. That was a very dramatic Donald Trump type of entrance. I saw a lot of chatter on social media comparing it to the opening of his famous reality TV show, The Apprentice. So, you know, maybe, you know, calling back to his most popular famous thing here in the United States for a little boost here in Cleveland.
Any other speakers that stood out to you?
You know, Rudy Giuliani's speech was very impassioned. Tonight's theme was Make America Safe Again. And that theme really had some push to it, given the shootings of the three police officers in Baton Rouge. I was speaking to delegates all day that were talking about the sense of unease that's in this country and the racial divides and the unrest. And Rudy Giuliani really hit on a lot of those themes in his speech, saying, we don't want a white America, we don't want a black America, we just want America. And that was received really well on the convention floor here.
What can we expect for the rest of the week?
That's a great question. You know, now that the Never Trump movement has had this last moment, I think we've seen the last real push that we can get in terms of the Rules Committee and the convention floor. I don't think that there's much left that they can do to unseat Donald Trump. But that's not to say that they won't continue to protest on the convention floor, that we might see delegate walkouts, and that we certainly will see lots of protests around the arena here in Cleveland.
Have you seen them so far, protesters outside?
Just a few. I didn't go out to the main protest areas today. I was primarily inside the convention center. So, you know, tomorrow I'll probably be heading out, seeing as people come into Cleveland, as the intensity builds here, and people really start to realize that the effort to unseat Donald Trump is probably not going to work.
Well, we appreciate it. We hope you can get some rest. We know you have a long, busy week, and we appreciate your giving us the inside visuals of everything that's happening. VOA Congressional Correspondent Catherine Gibson, thanks so much.
Always good to talk to you.
Well, the Republican National Committee has also included in their draft platform for the convention an amendment declaring pornography a public health crisis. One group that is actually applauding this is the National Center for Sexual Exploitation. Here to talk more about it, the organization's communications director, Haley Halverson. Haley, great to speak with you. Why is porn a public health issue?
It's really a combination of the type of harm that's caused by pornography and the pervasiveness of pornography. You know, a 2014 study found that pornography use is linked to decreased brain matter in areas of the brain associated with motivation and decision making. Research demonstrates that pornography use is linked to increased verbal and physical aggression against women, also to increased acceptance of rape myths, higher incidence of STDs. So we see that pornography has a number of harms that harm not only health in the body and mind, but then also society. And then we also see that it's almost impossible for any individual or family to protect themselves from it. 27% of older millennials were first exposed to pornography before they even hit puberty. And so this is something that needs to be addressed on a national stage in order to really combat the destructive nature of pornography.
And how does it relate to sex trafficking?
It is definitely tied to sex trafficking. First of all, it's a form of sexual exploitation itself. And also, a number of individuals who are in the pornography industry could be defined as trafficking. They have facing some form of coercion. And also, it increases the demand for sex trafficking. We see that a study out of Cambridge found that people who are watching pornography have an escalating need for something new, something novel. This leads not all users, but some users to then act out seeking to actually purchase sex from a prostituted or trafficked person. So we definitely see that they are linked.
And finally, your organization is also praising McDonald's. Can you tell us why?
Yes. McDonald's, after a few years of having petitions going on asking for it to filter its Wi-Fi, has now changed its policy to offer filtered Wi-Fi so that there won't be public access to pornography in its corporate-owned restaurants. And the same service will be available to its franchisees as well. This is the result of a campaign spearheaded by Enough is Enough in partnership with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation and some 70 other organizations as well. So we're very happy about this. We're hoping that Starbucks will follow suit, and McDonald's has joined the ranks of other companies such as Chick-fil-A and Panera Bread that are filtering their Wi-Fi and doing their part to address the public health crisis of pornography.
Have you seen any backlash from the pornography industry because of the successes that you've had?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they definitely aren't happy about it. We see that a certain pornography website after this amendment passed in the Republican National Committee gave free memberships to all of the RNC members through the convention, trying to convince them that maybe if they look at porn, maybe they'll decide that it's not harmful. We actually believe the opposite. If you look at what there is, it's incredibly offensive, first of all, to women and often to minorities. And also, it obviously is focused on trends of violence that are harmful for children and adults alike to be consuming. So there has definitely been some backlash from the pornography industry, as can be expected. But we believe that the research and the facts will win out.
All right. We appreciate it. Thanks so much. The National Center for Sexual Exploitation Communication Director, Haley Halverson. Well, staying with the Republican National Convention, International Edition social media reporter G. Abby Lee here with us to talk about what is trending online with regard to this. Hey, G.
Hi, Lori. Like you and Catherine mentioned earlier, Monday was the first day of the convention. And the main chatter on social media was that the anti-Trump forces are being denied the right to rules vote. So even though it's in the beginning stage of the four-day process, it already seems like the party is not united. Also, the breaking news about Trump's motorcade getting into an accident has been trending Monday afternoon.
Wow. So, G, what's Donald Trump saying about the convention on Twitter? I mean, that's his favorite form of communication.
He tweets a lot. He's very prolific. Before the convention kicked off, Trump tweeted this: looking forward to being at the convention tonight to watch all of the wonderful speakers, including my wife, Melania. Place looks beautiful. So not as controversial as his usual tweets, I think. The Monday night's theme was Make America Safe Again, which has been also used as a hashtag. I also want to note his choice for running mate Mike Pence stayed pretty low-key on social media.
Well, speaking of hashtags, G, it was also World Emoji Day Sunday. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the social media reaction to that.
That's right. And that was also one of the trending hashtags Monday, hashtag World Emoji Day. Many people around the world celebrated Sunday, July 17th, by sharing their favorite emoji online. Do you have a favorite one?
I don't think I have a favorite. I mean, you know, I like the normal smileys.
The smiles, the hearts, the clapping.
Yeah.
And guess how many official symbols are recognized as emojis?
How many?
It will blow your mind. A total of 1,851 symbols. That's all for me today, and I'm leaving with a smiley emoji.
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Well, here are some of the stories we are following at VOAnews.com. Police at the U.S. Republican Convention on high alert. U.S. senators are urging South Korea to take Trump with a grain of salt. The number of Syrian refugees arriving in the U.S. jumps. Four Kenyan police officers charged with murder. And China holds naval exercises in the South China Sea. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues. Well, as Republicans gather for the first day of the party's national convention, presumptive presidential nominee on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton, spoke to civil rights activists at the annual convention of the NAACP. She condemned the killing of three Louisiana law enforcement officers, the latest in a recent string of shootings involving black men and police officers. Clinton vowing to hold those who kill policemen legally accountable.
We have difficult, painful, essential work ahead of us to repair the bonds between our police and our communities and between and among each other. We need one another to do this work.
A racially charged narrative has reemerged in the U.S. The latest shootings of six police officers was clearly in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, was clearly planned, according to State Police Colonel Mike Edmondson.
It is the chilling and the sheer brutality of the shooting. There is no doubt whatsoever that these officers were intentionally targeted and assassinated. It was a calculated act against those who work to protect his community every single day.
Edmondson showed overhead maps of the area to explain how Gavin Long snuck up behind police officers and shot them at close range. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards is calling the six law enforcement officers who were shot in Baton Rouge this past Sunday heroes in the truest sense of the word.
And we are going to find a way in Baton Rouge and around the state and around the country, I believe, to come together and out of this tragedy, we're going to be stronger, more united than ever. And it's going to be difficult. It's not going to happen overnight.
Well, the man who carried out the attack on his 29th birthday, Gavin Eugene Long, was killed by police SWAT teams arriving on the scene. The large scale of the crackdown in Turkey after a failed coup is alarming key allies, the United States and the European Union. The U.S. is urging Turkey to exercise restraint and act within the rule of law as it investigates last week's failed coup. It comes amid conflicting reports about whether a former U.S. Air Force commander confessed to being a ringleader of the attempted takeover. State-run media reports more than 8,700 officers have been suspended and 6,000 members of the judiciary and military have been detained. There's much concern privately among residents in Turkey, but that is not the case on the streets. International Edition's Jim Stevenson talked to freelance journalist Jody Hare in the Bosphorus side of Istanbul.
Thousands of people in cars with flags, honking, cheering, and essentially celebrating. It's something that you'd see after, in the winning city of the Super Bowl, rather than worry or even, there were close to 300 people killed during this coup, but right now people are celebrating the winning of democracy, as they say.
Are these people more celebrating the concept of democracy as opposed to perhaps staunch Erdogan supporters?
I would say these are staunch Erdogan supporters. Obviously, there are people that are worried, concerned that a coup took place, but those are not the people that are out in the streets. I don't think that they would dare to be out in the streets because there have been incidences across Turkey where people have been attacked. And the government has declared July 15th the People's Democracy Day. It's something that they plan to celebrate every year. So you've got the Erdogan supporters, but you've also got nationalists, and you've also got people that are sort of just on the bandwagon, I guess.
And how about security on the streets? Are you seeing a large police presence out there? And what about the military?
There's definitely a lot of police presence, not so much in the smaller towns, not that there isn't, but if you go into the central squares, you're going to see the water bomber trucks. There was tanks out earlier today in central Istanbul, also in Ankara. I do want to warn and say, although there is this jubilant mood on the streets and the squares, there are still large numbers of people that are very, very scared, that are considering leaving the country, those that can. I don't want to sound as though, it's a complete celebration across the country. Clearly, there are people that are very, very scared that the country is moving into destabilization, Islamization. So, let me just clarify that as well.
Jody, well, thank you so much for letting us know what's happening on the ground as you move about.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Starting July 18th, VOA's team of correspondents, analysts, and online journalists will provide extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic Party's political conventions. It's where delegates officially choose their presidential nominees ahead of national elections. So tune in and stay informed with VOA's coverage of this critical part of the U.S. presidential election right here on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
International Edition continues. Well, a scathing report that outlines a state-sanctioned doping system in Russia is prompting immediate calls for the nation's entire team to be sidelined from the Summer Olympics. The investigation released Monday confirms a scheme run out of the anti-doping lab in Moscow that ensnared 28 summer and winter sports, from track to snowboarding to table tennis. It lasted at least 4 years and involved at least 312 positive tests that went unreported at the behest of higher-ups in the country's sports ministry. The investigator, Richard McLaren, dubbed Russia's program, quote, disappearing positive methodology.
The system was set up after Russian authorities felt it was an abysmal medal count by the Russian Olympic team at the 2010 Vancouver Winter Olympics, and was in place until at least August of 2015.
The World Anti-Doping Agency has swiftly called for the International Olympic Committee to consider a full ban on the Russian team from the Summer Olympics, which start August 5th in Rio de Janeiro. The IOC Executive Board will be meeting later today to begin sorting through the options. The summer movie season is in full swing with a lot of good options now and on the horizon. I talked to Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard about two big showings that opened over the weekend, including the sequel to Ghostbusters.
I didn't realize what an American institution this movie is. There's people, like with Star Wars, that dress up like, you know, stormtroopers in different garrisons around the country, what they call cosplay. And they go to different charity events, they go to comic conventions. Well, they do that with Ghostbusters, too. When I saw my screening the other night in Vegas, they had this Las Vegas Ghostbusters organization there, and people were taking pictures with it. They had a car. So this movie is really beloved. I didn't realize how beloved it was until they started working on this film. So now we have a reboot. It's not a sequel, and it's a total movie by itself. You have female girl power this time with some of the strongest and funniest comedians out there. We have Kristen Wiig, we have Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones, and of course the great Kate McKinnon, they're all Saturday Night Live alums. So with the director Paul Feig, who wrote and directed the movie, he did Bridesmaids and also the great TV show Freaks and Geeks, and he also has Dan Aykroyd, you know, the original writer and star of Ghostbusters, as producer, and Ivan Reitman as a producer too, who directed the original film. So there's all kinds of good things going for this. But, of course, the pre-publicity for this movie is that people didn't want anyone messing with their memories with Ghostbusters. Now, I personally think it's great to reboot the movie like this because it's for another generation. And I thought it was funny. I really did. It doesn't deserve the hate that it's getting. And I think all the girls work well together. They each have their own characters, their own strengths. So the women really are funny. These are some of the funniest comedians. I love Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, yeah.
They're just really funny. So she brings her humor. Kristen Wiig brings her humor. Kate McKinnon and also Leslie Jones, who just commands everything that she does in every scene. And, of course, there's reverse sexism in this movie because they hire Chris Hemsworth, Thor himself, to be their secretary, who's just eye candy. He doesn't know how to answer the phone. He's a total airhead. And I thought that was a really funny play on that. And, of course, there's great ghost busting and there's great special effects. And, of course, there's tons of cameos, which I'm not going to spoil. Some of them are very familiar and also great comedians that are throughout the film.
And so then we have something completely different with The Infiltrator.
Absolutely. We have, if you're not looking for a Ghostbusters, if you're not looking to do a Ghostbusting movie, this is something for the adults. It's based on the true story of U.S. Customs agent Rob Mauser, played by Bryan Cranston, the great Bryan Cranston. And it's about him going deep undercover to infiltrate Pablo Escobar's drug trafficking scene in the late mid-1980s. So he poses as a money laundering businessman, and he teams up with John Leguizamo, who's also undercover, and Diane Kruger. And they just, this is fascinating to find out. At the height of the cocaine trafficking and the height of the drug trade in the mid-1980s, that the United States government was actively trying to stop the flow of drugs. You know, of course, ridiculous trying to see what they go up against in this movie. And Benjamin Bratt is Escobar's top lieutenant, played, Roberto Alejano, played by Benjamin Bratt. So this is a real fascinating movie. Do you remember that film with Johnny Depp called Blow? That was a few years ago.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's in that kind of vein. So it's a based mm-hmm. on true events mm-hmm. to find out how this man went undercover and absolutely has to become someone else and balance his home life with also playing someone that's totally fictitious. So it's thrilling. It's informative. And just to see Bryan Cranston, he's just fascinating in this movie. He really is.
Anything on the horizon that we should be looking forward to?
The next one coming up in a few weeks is the new Star Trek film. And so there's a lot of Trekkies out there looking forward to the next Star Trek film because Simon Pegg, who plays the English comedian, he wrote the film and also plays Mr. Scott in the film. So all the Trekkies are excited to see what Simon Pegg did with the Star Trek franchise. And also Suicide Squad. All the bad DC comic book villains are all together with the Joker and Batman supposedly having a cameo. So that's the other big, big film of the summer that people are expecting.
All right, we appreciate it. Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard, you can see his full video reviews at vegasfilmcritic.com.
This is Science in a Minute.
One of the key ingredients in making beer are the seed cones of the hop plant. They're also used in the manufacture of dietary supplements to help women relieve postmenopausal symptoms. Now, lab tests conducted by a research team at the University of Illinois at Chicago has found that an enhanced hops extract could also someday be used to ward off breast cancer. Researchers created compounds from the fortified hops extracts and then applied them to two different breast cell lines. They wanted to see if any of the compounds had an effect on the metabolism of estrogen, something that's considered a key process in breast cancer. A compound called 6PN was created from the fortified hops extract, and preliminary test results are suggesting that it could have anti-cancer effects. But additional research must be conducted to further investigate possible helpful effects of the hops compound. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to International Edition. We are glad you could join us. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States Trade Representative's Office announced on July 7th the annual product review under the Generalized System of Preferences program. This measure adds new duty-free status for travel goods, such as luggage, backpacks, handbags, and wallets, for least developed beneficiary developing countries, including Nepal. The new rule makes these products eligible for duty-free status beginning July 1st. U.S. imports of travel and luggage goods products totaled almost $10 billion in 2015. In 2015, Nepal ranked second after Cambodia of all least developed countries' exporters of luggage products to the United States. Nepal's exports of these products have grown 7% since 2014, totaling $1.8 million in 2015. U.S. trade preference programs provide opportunities for many of the world's poorest countries to use trade to grow their economies and climb out of poverty. At 40 years old, the Generalized System of Preferences Program, or GSP, is the largest and oldest U.S. trade preference program. Under GSP, the United States provides duty-free treatment for many imports from beneficiary developing countries and additional products for least developed beneficiary developing countries. About 5,000 products from 122 beneficiary developing countries and territories, including 43 least developed countries, are eligible for duty-free treatment when exported to the United States under the GSP program. Nearly 1,500 of these products are reserved for duty-free treatment from least developed beneficiary developing countries only. This is a tremendous opportunity for Nepali businesses to expand their exports to U.S. markets, said U.S. Ambassador Elena Teplitz. A strong commitment to open market policies, a stable and transparent legal environment that secures property rights, policies that foster dynamic entrepreneurial activity, and strategic infrastructure investments will help Nepal make the most of this opportunity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.